You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
This is Michael Gonneau with Middle East Research Center Limited and Insight to Israel. And I want to say thank you to America's Web Radio for allowing us to have this time, this 1 hour, which I wish it could be more, but that's the way it goes because it's being paid for, thankfully, by someone else. And God bless you. But I am thankful to America's Web Radio for bringing insight to Israel, the truth about the Jewish state and their struggle, their fight, their success for sovereignty and security on a daily basis. Every day in the Jewish state is a miracle and honey on the end of my tongue. And first of all, I want to say thank you to all of those who have contributed to Hershey's for Heroes. We have gotten a great deal of response. We're very soon going to be start handing those out and videoing the whole event. And you will see such a humbleness in these soldiers who know that they must defend the Jewish state against its enemies, against its... there are two kinds of enemies to the Jewish state. There's the leftist on a global scale. Some people do not want to hear this, but it is what it is. And then there's Islam from within and without, and the Muslims that have every opportunity, every blessing of being an Israeli citizen. It's amazing. They even have more rights sometimes than the Jews do. Discounts at the colleges and universities, job preference, what we call affirmative action. It's anyway, I am thankful to be in the Jewish state, and I am thankful for the people that I've been blessed to come across, that I've been blessed to meet and interact with, and that have touched my life in every way. And you know, I came to this before I came to Israel, and I'm sitting here across from Batzion
again,
and I'm glad that you're here. I'm sitting across from Batzi, and you know, I have to say that I was a Zionist.
You still are.
Before I came here.
Ah, okay.
But it's been reinforced. My foundation has been relaid and reinforced on principles that God gave the Jewish state, handed it to the Jewish people. There's been struggles. Not everything's been done perfectly. So I've been accused of saying, well, you think that Israel's so perfect. It's not. But who is? That's the question I have to ask. Who is? We are flawed. We falter. We fail. But at the same time, through our failures, God's glory is exalted. His righteousness becomes perfect in our lives when we submit to Him. That's amazing. Instruments and tools in the hand of the Creator, if we just submit to Him and be obedient. And this is why I say, Batzi, I just did a video that of some of the protesters at Bibi's place.
Very touching. You saw how emotional I got when I saw it.
And at the end, I combined that protest with these young people that come from the United States, 18, 19 years old, that feel the call of Hashem to come back to the Jewish state. And not only that, not only do they come back, but they live in an area, Judea and Samaria, that is very controversial, where Muslims attack the Jews on their own land, and these young people choose to live in those areas.
Very courageous. You know what I call them? I call them our bulletproof vests. That's what I call these people, because I live in the center of the country. I live in Herzliya, which is, you know, safe, relatively safe. It's close to the beach. And I admire those people. I have a lot of respect for them. I wish I were as courageous as they are. And but before I move on, I want to... You know, you're thanking everybody. I want to take the time and thank you, Michael, because you're a Christian Zionist. And I know many Christian Zionists are, the extent of their Zionism is from their living room sofas when they sit and they talk to the TV screen and they tell Israel what it should or shouldn't do. And you're here, you came on a one-way ticket, as somebody else described it, and I want you to know that some of us do appreciate it. You are a true friend of Israel and a true friend of the Jewish people. And I can tell you again, I mentioned to you that both my parents survived the Holocaust. My parents are both dead now, and I'm sure they're smiling from heaven, because that is where they belong. They're smiling from heaven knowing that if ever there is another Holocaust, unlike them, their descendants and the descendants of other survivors will never be alone, because as long as there are people like you who speak for us and stand for us and are going to be stand and be counted, they are happy and they're smiling and they're content. So well, thank you.
No, I appreciate it. You know what, Bhatti, it's amazing because I have a lot of people ask me, you know, why do you care? You have your own problems in the United States. But you know what? Israel's problems today are the United States' problems tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I know the Bible. I know that God has been merciful to me beyond what I even deserve. He's been gracious and long-suffering. And when I look at American history, or at our founding fathers, that history is being rewritten by the left even today. Even as we speak right now, we don't see everything that goes on because we are not able to step back and see with the eyes of God, the Alpha and Omega.
Yes.
And see all of the things that go on. But if it were not for the Jewish people receiving Torah from Hashem, then I would not have a Constitution or Bill of Rights.
That's true.
Because that's where the principles came from. I owe not only my founding fathers, I owe not only those who fought in World War I and World War II and all of the conflicts to keep me free.
You're those who stood in Sinai and received the Torah.
Absolutely, but I owe the Jews. I owe God first for my freedom, my liberty from within, the bondage from sin, released, but I also owe God, the Jewish people, for my freedom from without, my external freedom. And it's my duty, it's my service in this life. It's all I have, you know. And I think I'm glad that I can work together with people like you and some other folks that you have coming up. If I can mention Frank Gaffney.
Yes.
He was a great man.
He's coming to Israel, I told you, in a couple of months, yeah.
And there's so many people that expel and expend their energy in their life. It's not enough for us to sit back and enjoy, even for a time, because we only have a short time in this life, to say, I just want to kick back and, you know, just absorb what I can of the good times. But the good times never come unless someone else pays the price to allow
that
to happen.
That's true.
So I want to say, you know, look, while we're on this subject, and then we'll move forward, thank you to all of those who, even in small ways, support the work here in Israel. I want to say thank you, and you don't realize how much. I've been here for like 9 months now.
Yeah, that's long.
Yeah, and some people were actually, the naysayers were like, we don't think he'll last or make it. And I will say that it's only been because of people in the States that have undergirded and have contributed. It's people here. I had a good friend of mine, Yoav Susskind. I'm going to say his name.
Susskind?
Yes.
That's exactly the same last name as mine.
Okay. And Yoav told me, he said, Michael, you're going to be discouraged at times. You're going to go through difficulties, and you're going to probably want to go home. He said, but I'm glad that you're my friend. You've made me proud to be a Jew again and a Zionist. He said, we need you here. And it's not, and if anything else, it's the message.
Yeah. It's so true, Michael, because, listen, I just came back from the States. I visited my daughter there. She lives in Florida. And I forgot how easy life is and cheap life is in America.
Yeah.
In Israel, it's a struggle every single day. But you know what, Michael? I wouldn't have it any other way.
I wouldn't take it.
I wouldn't have it any other way. And I know a lot of people say to me when they meet me, why did you come back to Israel? And I say, no, you're asking me the wrong question. You should have asked me, why did you ever leave Israel?
Right.
Because, you know, it was great to be there, but it's even greater to be back.
Absolutely.
I love this country with all my heart, with all my might, with all my soul, just like the Shema, you know? you're supposed to love God with all your heart, with all your might,
right,
with all your soul. So I'm very happy to be back here. I will still be going away because I still need to visit family overseas, and there's still some countries I'd like to visit, but I will always be looking forward to coming back. And I recently wrote a little segment about coming back to Israel, landing in Israel. And how do I know we're close to Israel? Because the pilot goes on the announcement and he says, according to Israeli law, once we enter the airspace. Israeli airspace, we're supposed to be seated in our assigned seats and with the seatbelt, on. Yeah. And I know this is when my heart starts pumping, starts throbbing, going 50 miles an hour. And I always ask for a window seat because I want to be the first one, like the sailors in the old days shouting, oh, land or...
Land ho.
Land ho. I want to be the first one to spot Israel. And then poor person who sits next to me, he gets a lesson in Zionism. I have to give them a tissue because they start having the tears coming down. And it's just a sight to behold, to look at a country, a place that only 60-some years ago had absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And now you see building growing, you see highways.
It's amazing.
Like you have in America, and you ask, it's a miracle. Every time, to live in Israel, you have to believe in miracles. Because,
right.
but I wouldn't have it any other way.
You know what's amazing? Here I am, a Christian Gentile, sitting across from a Jew that practices Judaism. And you and I, Batsy,
share the same.
We get to experience every day what Moses did not.
I know.
What Moses did not.
I know.
What Joseph did not when they brought his bones back.
That's true.
What they did not. We are blessed by Hashem, by God, to experience what they did not.
And it's so true. What a blessing it is. It really is. I stood in the place where Moses stood and he looked at the land where God said to him, look at the land because you're not going to go there. And I hurt for him because I now realize what he had missed.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
If anybody deserved to be in this land, if anybody deserved it, it's this man.
With everything he put up with.
Exactly, for 40 years,
And it showed, one of the things that always astonishes me was, look, we're all disobedient. So, sometimes when I use Israel as an example, what I say can be misconstrued. But think about when Moses was on Mount Sinai and the Jews were being disobedient. They made the golden calf and God said, I will strike them down. I will start all over with you. But you see the love of Moses. Now, God was testing him. Some people think, God is not just up there with a rod of iron, ready to smite us when we fail.
Yeah.
But it's at the same time, he's love and mercy and compassion. But first and foremost, for all those things, he is a holy God and must be seen as such that sin cannot enter into his presence. And we must come before him with a clean heart and pure hands. And not on our own volition, because he's the only one that can do it, can make us what we ought to be,
He's the only one who can also read us properly.
Right.
Examine
the heart.
The heart and the kidneys, they say. In the Bible it's written, Bochen Kliot Valev means the examiner of kidneys and heart.
Right.
And
Jeremiah, he said, when you were in your mother's womb,
exactly.
I knew you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow, that's powerful.
And, you talk about Mount Sinai, I have to share something with you. In 1994, I believe, I went on a jeep safari into the Sinai Desert. And we climbed Mount Sinai. It's called Mount Horeb. And I stood where Moses stood, according to tradition. And I looked at the valley in front of the mountain. And that valley could have housed 600,000 people with their tents and everything. I can only just imagine sitting there and looking up at the mountains and seeing the
cloud,
and seeing the lightnings and seeing the storm that was raging, as God was forming or appearing in the cloud. And I have to say, I know you're a Christian, but as a Jew, I'm very honored that we gave the world this kind of a tradition, because
right.
a lot of what the world practices today was created in the desert. You know, the Ten Commandments, which is a
right.
basic universal, you know...
That's human rights
code,
right there.
Moral code, exactly. The court system, the...
Yeah.
I must tell you, Christianity and Islam and other major religions were revealed to one person and one person only. Our religion, God revealed himself, not in face or shape, but in presence, to 600,000 people.
Right.
600,000 people saw the experience of God, experienced God on Mount Sinai. We have 600,000 witnesses, whereas Christianity and Islam have only one witness.
Well,
I don't want to get into a religious...
But when I stood there,
I felt the strength of a testimonial of
right.
600,000 people.
Right.
And I was there. A lot of us were there.
Right, right.
You know, we were part of that major...
For the listener's sake, though, let me say this. First of all, there is no Allah... The Quran is a lie. There's no virgins waiting, okay? That's the way it is. Islam is a lie. I don't want Batsy to be misunderstood, because there is no correlation between Judaism and Christianity and Islam. Judaism and Christianity are very close. We honor and we revere. While the Muslims say they do, they distort and they have abused and they have neglected what the truth is.
Okay.
And in Christianity, according to history, even after Christ resurrected, there were thousands of witnesses to his appearing in different places. But that's neither here nor there. My point is, I just wanted to, for the listener's sake, so the left doesn't take
okay.
this and distort it.
Yeah.
Between
okay.
Christianity and Judaism, we are vastly different than Islam.
Okay.
So, just for that sake. But I'll tell you, the one thing while you were speaking that is so powerful that came to my mind mm-hmm. was that when that cloud had surrounded Mount Sinai, when Moses was in communion with God, mm-hmm. and God had to use that cloud to cover his glory, his holiness, and Moses said, "I want to see you." And he said, "You can only see my hindsight as I pass by."
True.
And he put him in the... There's an old, what they call, I can say what I want on my show, an old Negro spiritual that the blacks wrote, a hymn
mm-hmm.
that was written, I think it might have been by Fanny Crosby, who was a hymn writer. But it's called Cleft of the Rock, and it talks about how Moses was put in that cleft and could only see... the hindsight. Otherwise, he'd be consumed by the glory of God. But
yes.
he had that privilege. In fact, you know that when Moses came down, they had to put a veil over him because of the presence
nice.
Of God.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that if we were so submitted to God the way we should be, that we, his glory and our personal time with him would shine in our life and the lives that would be affected by that?
Well, you know, Michael, you know me by now, and you know what guides me in my life is my relationship with God and his commandments and, you know, the moral code most
right.
more than anything else.
Right.
And that's my guiding light.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of the major decisions in my life based on my conversations with God and tuning in to
absolutely
the messages that I received from him.
Absolutely.
And I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here.
We're blessed.
Yes, we sure are.
Well, I tell you, we spent 19 minutes.
Ooh, we don't have much time. Okay. Well,
no, but you know what? Folks, listen to that. There's somewhere, Batsy, someone listening to this show, you don't know where they're at.
That's true.
And you don't know just that word. Just like, you know, who was it? Was it Joshua? Maybe it was Joshua or Moses. When they were in the battle, when the Israelites were in the battle.
Raising their hands. It was Moses.
Yes. And when his hands had fallen and gotten weak, they came and held them
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. That was Moses.
Man, I'll tell you what. I'm thankful for my mother's upbringing that I remember this thing. Wow.
We are blessed through her, through you. We're blessed.
We're blessed.
We here in Israel really appreciate what Michael does for Israel, for the Jewish people, for the soldiers, with his project, with the
Hershey's for Heroes.
Michael, from the bottom of my heart, you are our hero. We are grateful to you. Thank you very much.
Well, so, thank you.
Do you want to move on to the next
segment? Yeah, let's talk about, we've got, in this segment, we've got about 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
I hate that.
I know, I know.
I wish we had like,
well, we can talk about other things.
Yeah, let's, let's start off. While you were going overseas, a lot of things took place here.
Such as?
Well, when did you get back?
I just got back 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
You talk about the release of the...
Ramadan took place, started while you were gone.
Finished yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing because in the media, and I'll send you the link, it's on Facebook, the media overlooked it every day. There was either in Jerusalem, near the Damascus Gate, which is the Islamic side, Arab side, the Islamic side, and there was either a stabbing of a Jew or a stoning. Yeah, and the media was not putting it out there.
During Ramadan?
Yes. There is a Facebook page that there was one day that three buses, and they had them lined up, huge boulders were thrown through the glass, and people were injured.
I didn't know that.
As the buses were driving through Jerusalem. Yeah, there's a Facebook page that has a link that tells the documents every day. And the media didn't put it out there, the leftist media. Because, you know, you have a problem with that just like we do in the States.
Yeah, I was in Jerusalem, but I don't remember seeing anything. As a matter of fact, I must share with you.
Yeah.
I went to the Western Wall, and on that day, I blessed God 10 times. There were 10 Jewish boys who were having their bar mitzvah.
Wow, nice.
And they came to celebrate it at the wall. And I looked at them and I said, they have every right to celebrate their bar mitzvah on Temple Mount.
Absolutely.
Where our temple stood.
Yeah.
And there's something else that's standing there right now, and they have no access. So my only blessing to those young men who had their bar mitzvah and to their families is that next generation, they'll be celebrating in the next temple. Because I really hope we will have a temple. The third temple of the sovereign Jewish state.
It's going to happen soon. It's going to happen.
We deserve it. We've earned it.
Right. I agree. I see it happening soon. I talk to Jews all over this country, and the two things they say to me that I completely agree with, and it's not even something I brought up in conversation.
Yes.
Random people they blurt it out. I had one guy in a coffee shop. We were talking, and just out of nowhere, Botsy,
yes,
he looks at me and says, the American Jews will come. Things are going to get bad in the United States, and the American Jews will come. I'm like, wow, where did this come from? And then there's other people I talked to that said, we will have a temple soon. And I agree. It's going to happen.
Well,
the stones are already cutting in. They're already laser cut, have been for years. And
every day that passes, Michael, and people need to know it, they are removing any evidence of us ever having been there. And this is wrong. We have no access to that place.
You know, it's funny you say that, because here's a history lesson people need to know. When Rome burned the last temple, this is where the word Palestine came into place.
Actually later. It was in 135 Common Era that it was called. The name was arbitrarily changed into Palestine.
Because they wanted to remove every existence.
They wanted to add an insult to injury. They hated the Jews. The Jews really were a thorn in their behind.
Look at Masada. Yeah.
Exactly. they were, you know, even when they had a decree that every single Jewish boy, when they heard that the Messiah is going to come from among the Jews, and Herod had the decree that every boy, young boy, would be. It wasn't because they were afraid religiously. That, you know, oh, you have a Jew, nice, because we have 12. You're going to be God because we have 12 gods. So one more God is not going to make a difference. That didn't scare them. They were afraid of political uprising by the Jews, Bar Kokhba, you know, the rebellion, and then you had Masada, and they were tired of the Jews. And they were so fed up with us that they wanted to add an insult to injury. So not only did they destroy the temple, burn Jerusalem, and remove the Jews, they decided to change the name and give it the name of the most fearsome enemy.
Philistines.
Of the Philistines that the Jewish people had in this.
Which Goliath was a part of.
Exactly.
And you know what we need? I'm going to tell you, I've been quoting this a lot lately.
Which one?
When they announced they were going to release prisoners. Botsy, it rose up with inside of me. I said, where are the Davids? When little Ruddy David left the field to go take lunch to his brothers,
yes,
who were on the front lines,
yes,
and there's Goliath cursing not only Hashem, but the Israeli army, and said, who will come out to fight with me? And those men trembled in fear. And David, who was intimate with God, said, who is this uncircumcised Philistine giant to challenge the armies of the Lord? His brothers were like, hey, little guy, who are you to come down here? Now, these were guys that were cowards, hiding in the trenches.
Yes.
Giving in to the enemy, bargaining.
And since you're talking about Goliath, might I add something that's been on the news a lot? When people say they're interviewing Palestinian children, I'm putting Palestinian in inverted commas, and their hobby is throwing stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I have people around the world saying, well, stones are not as harmful as tanks and bullets. My answer is, oh, you really think stones are not dangerous? Ask a guy by the name of Goliath what he has to say about stones. It really bothers me.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, they're underestimating what Israel is up against.
Right, right. And we need some Davids. We need some Davids that will stop compromising with an enemy that's going to want you dead anyway. And as a matter of fact, not only you, but they want me dead.
Yeah.
The Quran, let me say this, I'm going to say this again, and this is me saying it. The Quran is a lie. Muhammad was a child molesting, bloodthirsty. And there are no virgins. That's the reality that we deal with. That is reality. 1 + 1 = 2, that's reality. The Quran is a lie, reality. I can't. Sorry, Botsy. That's not Botsy saying it. That's me saying it. So if anybody's got anything to say, you can email me at michaelaganeau@gmail.com. Because I embrace hate email. Anyway, so, Botsy, we're going to take a break.
Okay. Time for another cup of coffee.
And listen, I want to say thank you to everyone that's listening. I hope that I get a little fired up sometimes. We're going to come right back, and we're going to hear about Botsy's trip to the United States, and she's going to tell a little bit about the book she's got coming up. She's having it edited right now, but that means it's done, right?
Yes, but okay, yes.
So we'll come back, and we're going to talk about that. This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back. This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. And I'm here with Batzion.
Mm-hmm.
Batzi.
Yes.
Which I finally say on a regular basis now instead of saying Batzion, which means daughter of Zion.
Exactly.
And we had a great first segment. That was, wow. That fired me up.
I thought
it was the coffee, but... Botsy, I want to say thank you for allowing me to come into your home.
My pleasure always. You know, Michael, you're always invited.
I'm very thankful every time that
my pleasure.
An Israeli invites me in their home. I've always been so treated so hospitably. So let's talk about Cuba. You went to Cuba.
Yes.
Now, I want to say this. 30 years ago, I'd have been against that. And I'll tell you why, because we have an embargo on Cuba because it's communist and blah, blah, blah. But the way our country is, as far as the government goes, it's so corrupt and we give money to rogue regimes and countries that hate us and all this other stuff. I say go to Cuba and spend your money.
Yes.
I prefer everyone in the world to spend their money in Israel, but...
Why did I go to Cuba? A lot of people, like some people say to me, what have you lost in Cuba? What have you forgotten in Cuba? Well, you know me, Michael. You know I've been pretty much all over the world. And it was a birthday present that I received for my daughter and her husband.
Nice.
When they asked me, what would you like? You know, some person would probably say, I want a Rolex.
You went to Cuba.
I went to Cuba. But I decided to go to Cuba because I've been fascinated. I lived here in Israel when a lot of Cuban Jews came here when Castro took over.
Wow.
And I've been fascinated by that. And of course, I was a child in 1963 when the, or was it 61? I don't even remember, when there was the missile crisis.
Yeah.
And I didn't know much about the history of that part of the world, and I was very lucky. I went there not knowing anything. I had misconception, preconceived ideas of what a communist regime is like. And, of course, Cuba is opening up, but it's still pretty close, and
yeah,
especially when it comes to America. But I remember the day before I went on my trip to Cuba, I was wearing a T-shirt that had the American flag on it, and I was at my daughter's, and she said,
"That was brave,
Mom. You are not going like this to Cuba, are you?"
And that's, I said, like me wearing an IDF T-shirt into the Gaza.
No, but I was just wearing it, you know. And then she said to me, "Okay, Mom, you're going. You're not going with your American passport. You're going with your Israeli passport, which is okay." And you're hiding your American passport inside your things because you have to leave America. I went there from Miami.
Yeah.
You have to leave America with the American passport.
You flew into Cuba from where?
No. I had to go. You're not allowed to, unless you're Cuban born,
right,
you're not allowed to fly directly from America to Cuba. You have to go via, generally, the Cayman Islands. That's where I went through. And my daughter, my daughter said to me, "Mom, hide your American dollars. You know, don't tell anybody that you're American."
Yeah,
don't. And I'm a very proud American. Keep a low profile. And she even said I was wearing cubic zirconia earrings. And she said, "Mom, take them off because they might think that they're, and they'll probably rob you." I'm telling you, such horrible misconceptions. The Cubans are wonderful people.
I'm sure.
They're friendly. First of all, you know, having to go through Cayman, Grand Cayman. Grand Cayman was harder going through their customs and immigration than it was through the Cuban customs and immigration.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. You have to go in and out of immigration when you go to the Grand Cayman. And I was in Grand Cayman twice before, so I was just at the airport. But it was so hard. And then I even before the ordeal started, even before I went to Cuba. Why? Because I wanted to buy pesos. Nowhere in America can you buy pesos. So not only do we embargo them, wait till you hear what happened to me when I got to Cuba. They embargo us. It's the first time in a third world country that I got less for a U.S. dollar.
Wow. Wow.
I couldn't believe it. Their currency is worth a lot more than than the American dollar. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And of course they have two currencies. They have the Cuban pesos, and there's a currency for tourists, for dealing with overseas people.
Really?
Yes. And it's I don't know how the Cuban people don't get confused, because when you buy gasoline, you have to pay with the convertible pesos, which is what tourists get.
Right.
Because they have to buy gasoline. So the gasoline they can only buy with convertible pesos. So Cuban people can go and they earn Cuban pesos, and
right,
they have to change them to convertible pesos to go and buy gasoline.
Wow, what a hassle.
So, what a hassle, yes. And it's still a very communist country. You can see that.
Yeah.
Healthcare is free. Education is free.
Let me say this, though. Their healthcare has to be substandard. There's no way it's...
No, you know, if you speak to... Depends who you speak to. If you speak to Michael Moore... You remember his movie
Sicko? Right, it's the best.
What a liar he is. Even my tour guide, who was, by the way, I had an excellent, excellent tour guide.
I'm waiting to hear this. This is going to be good, I'm sure. Your tour guide.
My tour guide, yeah, he's a Cuban, of course. His wife is a plastic surgeon, and he said that it's not substandard, it's excellent. But he's the one who said to me, "Michael Moore is a liar." He said, "I want you to go back to the American people and tell them that Michael Moore is a liar." And I said, "Why?" He said, "First of all, he must have lied to the American government when he told them for the purpose of his visit to Cuba. Because to get to Cuba from America, taking a boat and taking Americans with him, he had to tell them, he had to get the permission of the American government to go to Cuba."
Right.
He had to tell them the purpose of his trip. And America would not have allowed him to go to Cuba to badmouth America, which he ended up doing
right.
in that movie. He presented a false image of Cuba. He showed how people, like he took some people who had like asthma, and they could go into any pharmacy and get an inhaler. Lie number two, nobody, unless you're a Cuban citizen, can get free medical care, free inhalers, free medication. And you cannot get it unless a Cuban doctor gives you
a prescription.
So this is lie number two. Then he said, lie number three, people can go, he put those people in a hospital in Cuba. Nobody can be admitted to a hospital and get free medical care unless they're Cubans and they are referred by a Cuban physician.
Wow.
Which makes us wonder who sponsored his trip to Cuba.
The left wing.
Or Venezuela, or I don't know who.
Right.
And that's a Cuban telling me that.
Wow. Wow. I'm sure
I want
a
you
lot
to tell
our,
the American people that it was
our listeners will be very thank you for that information, because this is the same man that would say Israel's an apartheid state.
Yes.
The same man that would say there's a Zionist conspiracy. Look, I've got friends. They say they're right wing, but they're ignorance. They're ignorance.
Yes.
Oh, Michael, there's a Zionist conspiracy. And well, listen, let me veer off here. We're going to get back to Cuba. But I want to make something perfectly clear about what I see coming. There, Occupy Wall Street, while we're on this subject real quick, was very anti-Semitic. The leftist media would not put it out there, but the Media Research Center, who I used to work for, exposed it.
Yes.
Okay? There are three kinds of Jews in the United States that don't care about Israel, that are brand name.
Mm-hmm.
And I say brand name that are, well, let me put it this way. Hollywood is run by the Jews. The media run by the Jews, a lot of Jews, and a lot of media.
No, that sounds like the conspiracy of the Elders of Zion, the protocols of the Elders
of Zion. Right, right. But I want to make a point.
CNN is not run by Jews.
Right. It's run by Ted Turner, who's a left-winger, who funds the United Nations, who hates the Jews.
Yeah.
But this is the perception that Jews run Hollywood, that Jews run the banks, that Jews run the media.
Yeah.
Now, when the United States tanks economically, just like we tanked in the housing market, you and I are going to be having coffee in the afternoon, having a bit of a lunch one day, Botsy, and we're going to be turn on the news and find out the United States stock market tanked because it was bloated and inflated and lied. It was a big lie, just like the housing market in 2008.
I know.
And you know who's going to get the blame?
The Jews.
The Jews. Because
Goldman Sachs, you know, those
can. Exactly. Yeah. They run the... It's the appearance of running Hollywood, running the media, running the banks.
Lehman Brothers, yes.
And those are, many of those people don't really care about Israel.
Yeah.
Those are the ones who don't hear them standing up for Israel. And I believe they're going to pay a very heavy price for that.
Well, I'm afraid so. I'm afraid so. And, I was really surprised talking about the Jewish people, and I went to visit the Jewish community in Cuba. I wanted to know more about them. And they're happy there, so it makes me wonder. Yes.
Do you think it's just because of indoctrination since birth or what?
Well, I wonder either they were too poor to leave when everybody else left, or they just agree with the regime. They are left...
They're indoctrinated.
Indoctrinated.
It's easy. It could be you and I. It could easily be you and I.
But I want you to know something that I found very fascinating. Of course, we had the Bay of Pigs conflict there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the wealthy people that left Cuba just thought it was temporary. They were just living for a year or so. They left the houses, the big houses with the content. There are huge mansions in Cuba. In Havana. I couldn't believe it. They left those mansions in the hands of their servants, saying, I'm giving it to you for keepsake. Keep it until I get back. Those servants are now the owners of those homes.
And they never came back?
No. The homes were left. When Castro came to rule, the homes were left by the inhabitants. Those who lived in them were allowed to remain.
Wow.
They confiscated the gold and the money and whatever was in the banks. But the house were allowed. And what was fascinating to me as a Westerner, the first when I landed and I drove into the hotel area in Havana, I felt like I was going back to American Graffiti. Remember American Graffiti?
Yeah.
All the cars from the 50s and the 60s.
Wow.
The Chevrolet.
Yeah, because we see so many of those pictures.
Yes, they were so, it was so funny to see those. You know how we would pay a fortune to get those cars, and those people are driving their taxis and you know, private
I can't
vehicles.
Imagine that.
Yes. And I thought it was really fascinating. But, of course, you know, with the Bay of Pigs, I learned, you know, you go there and you're being indoctrinated by visiting museums. I went to the Museum of the Revolution.
Wow.
And I went to Che Guevara's museum.
He was a murderer.
He was a murderer, but, of course, they're trying to... I was shocked to see how much he's being idolized in Cuba, more than Castro, if you ask me.
Wow.
And all over the world, people walk around with his T-shirt,
yeah.
with the cap, you know, with the little...
The communist star.
Yes, and with his image on top, and of the T-shirt with his image, and his logo is on almost everything. He was idolized. And later, when I read about what he did, I thought, my goodness, people are admiring a murderer.
Yeah, yeah.
A person who cold-bloodedly just shot people because they refused to accept his ideology or anything else. So,
which is Marxism.
Yes, of course.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, wow. What an experience that was, that had to have been. You know, I'm glad that this is where, Batsy, that you and I were blessed because, you know, we've been given the truth. And that's what set us free. That's what gives us that fight for truth.
Yes, yes.
But I feel bad for people that have been submitted forcefully to indoctrination. You know, let's relate this to Israel. Because you and I had this discussion earlier.
Yeah.
Look at the children in the West Bank and in, or excuse me, Judea
exactly,
and Samaria.
Don't call it the West
and
Bank.
And Gaza, sorry, I apologize. Yeah. I'm trying to get that indoctrination out of me. and in the Gaza, that the world community, even the United States, funds these people that call for the death of Jews, and they're continued to be funded.
It's as if they're blinded to...
And they put it in their school books to hate Jews and Christians and the West, to kill Jews. It's in the school books. It's on the media. You can go to any YouTube video.
But how could the world be so blind? That's what I don't... I mean, even in the indoctrination, when I went to the museum and in Cuba and I saw the Revolution Museum, I saw... the aggression of the Yankees, that's how they refer to the... They don't even call us Americans.
Wow.
They call us the aggression of the Yankees. And, you know, I would understand why America would be disappointed with the regime falling, because America had a lot invested. They even had an American president, you know, ruling over Cuba until 1902 or 1904, I don't remember. But all of a sudden, it's like being taken away from them. And... I can appreciate why America would embargo Cuba, would embargo the regime. But children who grow up in Cuba see aggression, Yankee aggression.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm not a Yankee, I'm an American.
Right.
You know, and being presented as the aggressors. And there are kids who grow in Cuba and don't even know anything. I was sitting next to a girl on the plane to Miami from... You know, they flew with me also from Grand Cayman. And she knew nothing about America. And I remember, don't forget, it's leaving the Cuban airport, which is like one runway
right.
and like one waiting area, and going to Miami International Airport. And it's like you walk for miles until you get to customs, until you get to immigration. She just couldn't believe it. She had absolutely no idea what America was all about.
Wow.
Because all she heard was negativity. It's because of the Americans our schools are not developed. It's because of the Americans our schools are overcrowded. It's because of the Americans that you're suffering. It's because... And, you know, I could run the parallelism between...
Absolutely.
The way the, quote-unquote, Palestinians kids are being raised, all the calamities that ever befell them... Israel is guilty. The Jews are guilty of.
Right.
And, you know, I could just see...
And it's their own governments that
yes.
are guilty.
But you know what I like about the more and more I see is there are a lot of Cubans... You know, there were waves of immigration from Cuba to America. And Castro didn't care because at some stage it was all the invalids and all those that he couldn't take care of himself in his country and he just put them on the boats. You want to go to America? Go. He was happy to let them go. But now those people, you know, more and more people are bringing their families. So they're getting the taste of the Coca-Cola. I call it the taste of the Coca-Cola, you know. And it's easy to get addicted to it.
Right.
By the way, there's no Coca-Cola in Cuba. There's nothing American in Cuba.
Wow.
Nothing. Just as much as we embargo them, they embargo us. And it was... they're getting the taste of the good life in America because they come to visit their families and their families go back to Cuba. And they don't want to stay in Cuba. They want to continue to live the easy, good life in America. And it's addictive.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping that the same thing that happened in Russia when, was it Senator Jackson who negotiated all the, you know, was it the contemporary Jackson and Gorbachev when the glasnost and perestroika took place, when America started to bring more and more American influence into Russia.
Right.
And the Russians just, you know, had a taste of the Coca-Cola, as I say.
Right.
I'm just hoping that more Cubans realize what America is all about and see the opportunities that America gives. Still, America is still much greater than many other countries in the world in this respect, opportunity-wise. But I'm just hoping that Cuba will not make the mistake that Russia did or the Soviet Union did and did reformation and reconstruction at the same time, opening up, and that they will do it in stages. And I think it's happening maybe at a slower rate in Cuba. More and more is opening up.
Yeah.
They're letting people have a little bit of small businesses maybe. More and more, especially since Castro's brother took over.
Raul.
Things are changing. But there's a joke that goes in Cuba that one time Castro, but too bad you don't have a video here to take, but this is, it has to
be visualized. We'll do video again.
It has to be visualized. Castro is standing there and behind him are his highest generals and he's talking to the people of Cuba and he said, we will have the houses, the big houses, we will have the good income, we will have the good conditions, and we will have to go to work.
Ah, pointing. He's pointing to them.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to work, he points
exactly
to the people.
Points to the people.
No, absolutely. Wow, that's hilarious.
You know, you could see it, but unfortunately your listeners couldn't see it. But they're even joking about Castro nowadays in Cuba.
Yeah.
There were times you couldn't even say anything against the regime.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because when I was in Romania, I spent a year there.
Okay.
I remember walking past this huge wall that was length and width-wise, it was very, very big. And inside was a factory. And so I was with some friends, and they started laughing, and they said, Michael, shh. And I'm like, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, back during Ceausescu's days, there was a factory that made machine guns.
Yes.
But it was a secret.
Okay.
Like, nobody knew it. But everybody knew it. So it was like a joke. And it's amazing the sense of humor that people have to live under those conditions, how they make jokes about their leaders. There's an American sense of humor, which I appreciate. I grew up with, of course.
Yeah.
But then there's something about the sense of humor to be said that I think sometimes is much more life comical about people in those conditions.
And it's cynical. You know, like we were talking, I was really amazed at the openness of the guide. He was a very intelligent man, and he's in the tourism business, so he knows, I mean, he meets people from all over the world. And he's the one who said to me, notice when you're in the hotel, or notice when you, I said, how do people survive you? Because on Cuban pesos, they earn the equivalent per month of $12.
Wow.
I mean, nobody could survive on $12. And I said, how do they survive? He said, they are wonderful at survivals. He said, you see the chicken that you're eating here for lunch, when we were all stopping at a restaurant, our group was stopping. He said, you know, you're getting a chunk of it. But let's say the cook was given 4 chickens. He made that meal out of 3 chickens, and 1 chicken went home with him. And I started paying attention. You know.
Wow.
I started paying attention to the way people behave, like waiters in restaurants. Like if I went to a buffet, most dinners or most lunches and breakfasts were a buffet. Very nice. Some of them had nice buffets, wonderful meals. And I could see that the waiter, like taking a few slices of this cheese, a few slices of this, and then wrapping it up and probably taking it home.
In his pocket, yeah.
Yes. So,
and don't be surprised if what we take for granted and leave on our plate.
I know. That's what's shocking. I just had some friends visiting from overseas, and they were just shocked because we went to dinners and lunches, and Israeli portions, you know, by now are huge.
Yeah.
And he said, and some of the people said, what are they doing with the rest? And the waitress said, they're being thrown away.
You know, I'm going to tell a story that nobody knows about since I've been here that happened to me.
Okay.
I'm sharing, not airing, for all those that are listening.
Okay.
I don't make a lot of money. In fact, according to U.S. government standards,
yes,
I'm like a lot of people right now in the States. I'm on poverty level. And I don't say that. Look, I love you, and I work. I love my job, and I love being here. So I don't say that as a negative. But I was... I was making phone calls to the States,
yes,
calling people, giving them an update, and it was on the beach one night.
Yes.
I just wanted to stick my feet in the cold sand, and it was back in May, and it was just so enjoyable just to sit there and enjoy. So I was at a restaurant where they had tables and stuff on the beach, so there was a couple sitting behind me. And I don't go without, trust me, okay? I don't want people to get the impression that I go hungry or anything. It's not even close to that. I'm blessed. But there was a couple behind me that had schnitzel chicken with salad, Arab salad. It's just cucumbers and tomatoes.
Very cut fine.
Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh.
So they're sitting behind me, and all of a sudden, they get up and they walk away, and they leave all this food. Hadn't even touched it. So I'm on the phone with a buddy of mine in D.C.,
mm-hmm,
and I just waited for like 20 minutes, and you know what I did? I just jumped in the seat behind me. I was like, you know what? They never even touched this.
Yes.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I started eating.
And you enjoyed every bit.
And I loved every bit. In fact, the waiter came up to me, okay?
Tell me which place is it?
Oh, my gosh. I can't remember.
To get a free meal? Perfect.
So, hey, the guy walked up that was working at the restaurant, and he looked at me, and he winked, and he said, Sababa, good.
Yes.
So, because he's like, he told me, he said, well, I don't understand why they wasted that food. They didn't even touch it.
I know.
And you know what I said? I said, God, I know this came from someone else, but thank you. Thank you for, you know, it's not like I'm going hungry, but it's a simple fact that for whatever reason, someone left that sitting there and never touched it.
Yeah.
And I was able to, in fact, I asked the waiter if he wanted to sit down and have a bite to eat with me. But anyway, so, you know what, Botsy? We have 2 minutes.
Wow, time flies.
It does fly.
Yeah, I have so much to share with you about. I just loved it.
We're going to do it again.
Yeah, because it was
You got a souvenir from there. So let me ask you, what did you think of the Jewish community there? Tell me real quick.
Just their, you know, they were very...
Do they keep Shabbat? Or?
Yes, I actually visited them in the synagogue. I went to visit them in the synagogue.
Wow.
Very small community. But what's fascinating to me is here are Jews in a foreign country, in a diaspora, the way we call it here in Israel. And you would think they would all be together, but you have Sephardic Jews, Jews of darker skin origin,
wow,
that come from Spain, from Arab-speaking countries, and Jews that come from Eastern European, Ashkenazic Jews, two separate synagogues.
Wow.
You would think that they would be together, but no, and they keep that. You're not supposed to mix the communities. No marriages, no mixed marriages between the two.
Wow. So do they feel any desire to come back to Israel?
No. It's a dwindling community. And they're very comfortable there, which really made me wonder. Maybe they do agree with the regime, with the ideology, that why else would anybody be there when they can come here to Israel and live a much better life?
But just like the United States, and that girl didn't know, there's that obvious possibility that maybe they don't realize the blessing of being in Israel.
Because they've
been adapted for so long. You know, it comes back to we're very blessed, Botsy.
Yeah.
To have the knowledge, the truth that we do, and we're not indoctrinated. Botsy, I want to say thank you for the time. Wow, maybe we didn't hit one specific point or talk along one specific line, but it's always a blessing.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
I'm going to take this. I don't live off of yesterday's meal that I ate.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
Yeah.
Because you'll go hungry.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm going to take the truth, the buffet of truth that we put out here, and I'm going to carry it with me for the rest of the day and eat off of it.
My pleasure.
I'm picking the truth out of my mouth, out of my teeth, with an ideological toothpick.
I love that.
Hey, I want to say thank you to everyone that supports Merkle. You know, I don't fundraise a lot, and I want to say those of you who would like to support the work here in Israel, go to Merkle, MERCL.org, Media Research Center Limited, Merkle.org, and when you make a donation, specify it towards the work here in Israel. Send me an email at michaelaganot@gmail.com or go to my Facebook page at Michael Ganot and let me know so I can put you on my email list. And I certainly would appreciate it. There's a lot of work that gets done here, not just by myself, of course, but it's all of us working together.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of it.
It's a pleasure, Michael. Always a pleasure. And I invite you again to come and interview me. I always have something to share with your readers, and most of all, I want to share how grateful I am for someone like you who doesn't speak from both sides of his mouth, who actually follows what he believes in, follows God, and wants to do what God directs him to do. And you are wonderful. We love you here in Israel. And guys, we're going to keep him.
Batsy, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you to those that are listening. God bless the United States of America, the Patriot Conservatives.
Amen.
And God bless the sovereignty and security of Israel and those that stand to fight for it.